What's up, everybody? Welcome into your Friday, October 7th edition. This is the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns. And we are going to have, I think, a pretty fun episode here. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. If you missed yesterday's episode, I unfortunately had a situation where Jordan Zerman and I couldn't connect. So we were unable to get through, and I wanted to still post something for you guys. So I went ahead and posted, the OBR weekly show, which I think Fred and Barry do a great job on that. So check that out if you'd like. If you'd like to hear a different voice than my own at some point, that's always an option. So go back and check that one out. The OBR site, we got some great stuff up, including a fun roundtable on looking ahead already at what positions we feel like the Browns need most, because that is certainly worth discussing, in my opinion, positions the Browns need most, because they're showing up already this year through four games. That's a fun read. And then there's an analytics preview of this weekend, which we'll get to in this episode. We're going to bring in John Colosimo for our usual Friday spot. And we have a lot to talk about, John. What's up, man? How are you? How's life?
Just busy, man. Just trying to do one day at a time here. And sitting here almost at the end of my week. I got Iron Maiden tomorrow in Columbus. Ooh. I'm excited about. I'm sitting here watching paint dry, aka the Thursday Night Football. But that's where I'm at right now. I know you're busy as well, but that's basically how life's going, man.
I feel like October's up there for busiest months of the year. You get the 31 days. It just is like the kickoff of Q4 for a lot of. It's just busy. It's busy, man. So, there's a lot to still discuss here with the NFL, and I think we should always, like I said, I always try to give you a chance to sort of put the bow on the week before. So is there anything you've either read or seen or have a thought about, something that has mattered from this past weekend you want to dig into?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly no real reason to bring up fourth down calls. That's getting its rounds all week. So, but I will say I ran into a quote from Woods today that probably said more than any of the, interviews or questions that people have had on defensive breakdown so far this year. What'd he say? He goes, he said he's reduced the amount of two call plays to try and minimize the miscommunication on defense that's resulted in some of these blown coverages. Said the guys pick verbal communications or hand signals, and they've been doing a good job at cleaning those issues up.
Lots to unpack there. So when I hear that, I think one thing. So I think that what he means by that, and what I think people are not totally understanding, is that he means checks. Usually what will happen is if a team comes out in a certain look, they will have a check based on if they're in empty, if they're in whatever. There's always a check, right? Like, because certain coverages usually don't match up as well as you would like with others. So you have a check. Like if a team comes out in empty and you're maybe in cover three, hey, we checked a quarters on this. Or if you're in cover six and you get a 3-by-1 look, you want to check out of that. We check to cover two at that point. Like what I mean is usually to certain looks, there will be auto checks that happen. So I think that's what he's kind of getting at on that one. It's not necessarily like, hey, here's two true defensive play calls. You guys sort it out. I don't think that's the case, but I think a lot of people have sort of taken it that way. So what I think, again, is that check stuff, though, if somebody doesn't recognize, John, that it is an empty look, right, they might not catch the change, right? Or they might not catch the check that it was made by somebody at the line with a hand signal or something of the sort. So that I think that they're saying is we're going to lock in quarters, right? We're going to lock in whatever coverage, we're going to lock it in and we're not going to change it. And I think that's something they felt inclined to do just because of the situation they're dealing with, where they just can't get it right. And again, it can be verbal, it can be hand signals. Usually if you're on the road or home, it's loud. You sure like to have hand signals there. And I don't think it's bad to let the players pick the hand signals personally. So I think that quote on the surface sounds strange to a lot of people, but it's really not that strange, because it can get to the point where teams will have like, okay, think about the Browns, for example, John, who come out in 13 personnel and they'll come out with three tight ends left, all, two guys in a wing, one guy at the line, then they'll shift to empty. And it's like, well, you can't stay in the same coverage if they're in that look versus empty. It's just impossible. So there are checks to be made. I think what Joe Woods is saying is, we're peeling back the number of checks that we have to make this as easy as possible for our guys. You still have to have some because of the example I just gave, but I think they're pulling it back, which is a good thing. We didn't notice any coverage bust. Now, you will get mad and say, well, there was a coverage bust on the Zacchaeus 42-yard catch. That wasn't on a DB. I'm 98% positive they don't pass that off, and that's on a robot linebacker. It's three deep, three under, and their linebacker has to run under it. He has to seek it out. Jacob Phillips, I'm looking at you. Seek it out and run under it. So I think I'm fairly positive that's what they do, because there was an example of JOK doing that exact technique in a similar coverage look earlier in the game. So, yeah, that's where I'm kind of at. I don't think it's that crazy in general. To say it the way he said it, I just don't think people understand some of the nuance of what he might mean by that and why it's not that weird. It's really just meant to simplify the guys not even having to say, like, hey, if we're going to cover three lock, that means we're locking in three and we're not changing. That's different, right? You know, so whatever it takes, I don't care, man. I don't care if they wear wristbands. I don't care if they tap their helmet. I don't care if they bark at each other. Whatever that means to get you all on the same page is it, right? So, that's kind of what I take away from it. Do you have anything on that? Do you think I'm right? Or do you think Joe would mean something different by it?
No, I think you're right on the checks part. I've more keyed in on that second piece, which was, you know, talking about players' choice on how they're delivering that information. That to me I was layering that in with some of these quotes, the spicier quotes maybe, or non comments that we've gotten out of the DBs after these blown coverages. And so you do have to, especially if you're a zone team, you're gonna have to have these checks. I mean, because you know, every zone coverage has got a beater for it, so you know, you have to have checks. What's going on with the communication? Obviously there's been some communication problems. Whether or not that's, you know, they're using hand signals and, you know, somebody's not looking for it, doesn't see it, or if it's just the brain farts, I don't know. You know, it might not have anything to do with real communication in terms of making these checks. It may just be somebody just blowing what their assignment was. So I don't know. That's the part I keyed in on, and you're probably right. It's, you know, it's probably just a little bit more overblown than you could. And it's just a sensitive subject.
Yeah. It is a bit of a sensitive subject. There's no doubt about that. Well, let's shift to the other question I think is kind of looming out there, which is that Kevin Stefanski should give up play calling. I will never understand it, John. My point is very simple. While I do understand that he is, they could be better at some of the smaller attention to detail things, as far as guys understanding situational football, guys understanding not to catch a punted ball at the 10-yard line and let it roll down to the one and down it at the one, or attention to detail and some other things. I feel like some of those things that people are talking about being ready are more Monday through Saturday things and not things on a Sunday. So, like, again, just my opinion on this scenario, Kevin's best thing, why he got hired, was that ultimately he was a great play caller, and I still think he is. He had a bad week last week in one scenario, that is goal line scenario, but I think he's a great play caller in general, and pulling him away from that and giving it to a less experienced coach in Van Pelt as the dominant voice as the play caller seems like making what is a really nice positive all of a sudden now a net neutral or negative. And that to me, and Kevin's not just going to fix the defense. He's going to have an opinion on it. He's given thoughts on it already, played secondary at the college level. He knows it. He's coached on the defensive side of the football through his NFL career at certain various points. Like, he gets it, but like, that's why I just don't understand why you would want to take what he does best and then take away that overall positive. Like, I think the thing you could argue is that he needs to, as the year wears on, or more than likely at the end of the year, make some hard decisions on friends of his, mm-hmm. whether his guys he really has liked and coached with and grown with are his best sources down the line. Like, he needs a CEO of the defense. I don't know if Joe Woods is a CEO of the defense type. Not sure on that one, so remains to be seen. And Prefer, you can guess where my opinion is on that. But you know, I just don't think that people think, okay, so you want Kevin to just kind of be standing there on the sidelines and just kind of chirping in on the offense every now and again and counting up special teams players, and like, I just don't get that, man. I don't know, but I could be wrong, and I'm willing to be told I'm wrong if you think otherwise.
No, it's extremely stupid. It's a stupid idea. The, you know, I don't understand it, and particularly dumb when you consider the performance of the offense, given the personnel that they have. Sure, they've got Chubb and they've got a great offensive line, and you know, but you know, the what they do with their running game is not just, you know, throw the players forward. I mean, they have creative schemes and they do excellent things in that regard. It's not, you know, they don't have the greatest set of wide receivers in the NFL. They, you know, they're working with a career backup quarterback and getting more out of him than anybody else has previously. This offense is largely succeeding. So you see people bring this up like for any reason, like if the defense blows a call, what is he going to do about that? Do you want him to like helicopter dad Joe Woods over there on his defense? That's some stupid stuff. Do you want him focusing on special teams? You know, like it would be different, you know, if he was blowing stuff like time management, like things like that, where he never has had a problem. He has never had a problem with those types of things that maybe, you know, those are the kind of things I kind of see people, then maybe you could make a good point where, you know, I've seen some coaches just be so focused and into the play calling that there's other things like these time management, understanding situational football, all those kind of things that that kind of go by the wayside, and they need assistance to help them with that and whatever. And I'm not, you know, I say get all the help that you can that makes sense. You know, without putting too many cooks in the kitchen, but it just doesn't make any sense given the state of the team that you would pull him away from play calling. And nobody has, I just don't understand it. It's such a spacey, galaxy-brained idea that I don't understand what people want, except for they just, you know, they want somebody to blame. They want somebody to fix something. You know, they'll go to that. Well, he's the head coach. Ultimately, it's his job. But you've already made the real point here. You know, what we want to see out of Kevin is, you know, is he going to be able to make the tough decision if he's got guys who, and that very may, well may be the case here with Joe Woods and maybe less so Joe Woods. We'll see. We got a long season ahead to find out. But like, Prefer, we're not getting our money's worth out of that guy. I hope that he's able to make a decision on that. And we're just not dealing with this kind of people telling us we have a good special teams coach like Tabor and like he stays on the staff somehow for 15 years. I hope he's able to make those are the kind of decisions. And those happen, generally speaking, in the offseason. You know, that isn't something you need to pull him away from something he's genuinely good at so that he can go, you know, talk about the hands team on kickoff. Get the fuck out of here. You know, I'm just not seeing that.
Yeah. He does need to give those things attention Monday through Saturday, like I said, and that could be an issue. Like, yeah, I'm not saying you disagree with me there at all, but like, to me, it's just making up something to make it up because you're frustrated they didn't score a couple times in the red zone, which I agree. I am too. But it's such a strange vibe to me.
I think it comes down to like people, like there's a ton of people that are super myopic, right? They're watching the Browns. It's all they watch, really. Maybe they watch Monday Night Football. Maybe they watch a little bit of Thursday Night Football. Maybe they got the late game on, you know, in peripheral, but they're, you know, they get myopic and they don't, you know, people who don't really understand what is commonplace and what is like, they seem to lose sight of the baseline of what, you know, what is common in the NFL, what is uncommon in the NFL. And I don't know, I just see myopic fandom sometimes when it comes to that stuff. Like
I do too. I think you're saying the right things and I just refuse. I can't see it any other way. I'm asking for opinions. I've yet to hear somebody give me a good one on that. So anyway, we're going to take our first break of the day and we will be right back. And then we're going to jump into a fun hypothetical question. And then around the AFC North, as we always do, we'll be right back. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform today. Play in pick'em contests versus other people for the shot at winning $250,000 in cash alone. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb your leaderboard for a shot to win big money every single day. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20 times your entry if you hit all your picks. Bet on up to 5 player props, even those over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including the NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up with this promo code, which is very simply for the fans of this podcast, OBR. Use that promo code OBR at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app on the App Store and get a first deposit match up to $25. So again, promo code OBR. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but also where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. Again, that promo code, OBR, nohouseadvantage.com.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, so at the time of recording this podcast, it is 10-10 here on Thursday night, as we release this before Friday. It's a 6-6 game in Denver in the midway through the third quarter. And I'm just telling you, man, watching both of these offenses, it feels like expansion teams. They're bad. They're really bad. And I know that there are some pieces missing on both sides. The running back situation and both sides are missing players. And I get that, but this is ugly. And I'm particularly interested in the two quarterbacks, because these are two guys who could have very well ended up in Cleveland. Cleveland multiple times has gone hard after Russell Wilson, didn't get him. And then obviously Matt Ryan was, when the Browns were eliminated from the Deshaun Watson situation, when we thought they were, it was Matt Ryan was like the guy that everyone thought they'd go after, and they might have, but both of them look really terrible, and both of them are older. And it, to me, is, you know, it's interesting. I think Matt Ryan would be better here than he is in Indy because of all of the circumstances around the quarterback. He's been really good in this exact specific system before. Cool. So while he is struggling, and I think he's tied for the NFL lead with 6 interceptions right now, I do think he'd be better here. How, I mean, you know, is he better than Jacoby Brissett? I don't think so right now, but better than what he's doing in Indy. But then you have Russell Wilson, who's been really bad through the first, you know, few weeks of the season here. This is week 5 now. And it's like, as we sit here, and I know nothing is the same today as it is tomorrow, and things could change on a dime. But I mean, I think I'd rather have 1 year of Matt Ryan than 7 years of Russell Wilson, who's 33. Like, I don't know how that gets that much. But I mean, they have Jerry Jeudy. They have Cortland Sutton. They looked more explosive with Drew Locke. I mean, I don't really get it, man. I don't really get it. And it's like, if I were a Denver fan, I would be really uncomfortable with where this all is. Now, again, things can change. They can figure things out. He's not locked into who he is, but I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm really uncomfortable with that. And then you watch Matt Ryan as a Browns fan, as somebody who was a serious contender for his services. It's like, yeah, I'm good on that too. So weird, but I would imagine you're in the same boat as me. Like, I would not want whatever Russell Wilson is these days. I don't think I'd want that for 7 years. And then the person's a good person, and yeah, he's corny as all get out. But like, I just don't think I'd want that player for 7 years, man.
Oh yeah, these Subway commercials, the yelling on the sideline, the you know, pass run, like he's in high school. You know, and then you're talking about all that guaranteed money. You've got a talented roster, you know, and I think you know, to answer that question, 100%, I'd rather be in a position where, I've got Matt Ryan for one than 7 years of this. But you did hit on something that I didn't think of when we brushed on this, before the show, which was, you know, and it relates to the last segment, which is, look at these teams, guys. You know, look at these teams and tell me, you know, that, you know, they're not bereft of talent. You're talking, both of these guys have receiver talent. You know, you got Quentin Nelson, they have offensive lines. They're talented teams. They're more talented teams than a lot of, you know, previous Browns teams that were put together. There's no cohesion in the offensive systems here. You know, when you talk about, you know, criticizing Kevin Stefanski for his play calling and how they run this system, watch this Thursday night game. I dare you. Like, you know, Clockwork Orange style, peel your eyes open and watch this 60 minutes of awful football. And, you know, this is what you're talking about when you, you know, complain about what you have in Stefanski. Neither of these systems looks in any way coherent or like they're doing anything with a purpose. It looks really, really bad. So, yeah, just wanted to make that point.
It's very bad. It is altogether a very bad look right now for both of those teams. And
I think both these guys would look better in Cleveland than they do in either of these systems. You know, yeah. I really do.
Looks like Russell Wilson found a 51-yard throw, so he's now up to 138 yards late in the third quarter here.
That's complete accident.
Yeah, yeah, man. I really don't know. No. I really don't know. I'm just glad to not have to think about that, I guess, is the way to put it, right? So, anyway, let's shift to the AFC North, where there's a huge division game this week for Week 5. We have Baltimore and Cincy. It's an 8:20 Sunday night football game. Cincinnati's traveling to Baltimore. We'll get your thoughts on that in a second. We're going to start with the 1-3 Steelers at the 3-1 Bills. I think we're here, man. We arrived at where we thought we would arrive a year late, but the injury luck has flipped on Pittsburgh a little bit, and their offense is anemic, and they're destined to be a 4-13, 5-12 team, maybe, and have a high draft pick for the first time in a long time. How high that draft pick is, we'll see, but they're going through the ringer their next few. We thought that Kenny Pickett, you and I had that discussion on Kenny Pickett just not too long ago. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't have a great feel for where that thing is going. So I'm interested in your opinion, a little bit of where you think it's going and with Pickett, because Pickett was okay in his work. I mean, there was a couple of interceptions that were really fluky of the three. One of them was a bad late throw that got that at the sideline got tipped. He shouldn't even have thrown it. The other one was a Hail Mary situation very, very late in the game, the final seconds, and then a jump ball to Claypool that Claypool bobbled around and got intercepted off a tip. So I didn't think it was bad, but it just this is what we want, man. We want them to try to figure out, is he good or is he bad? And let that take a little while, right? Let that take a little while is my opinion on it. So
it's got to be close to a best case scenario for us in terms of the timing for their bad season, right? Because having drafted Kenny Pickett, so they're unlikely to take a quarterback in a quarterback rich draft in some respects. I wouldn't say it's like crazy deep, but I mean, there's some talented quarterbacks coming out, especially versus last year, which was, I mean, in the rookie era, historic in terms of a lack of interest in the quarterback class. So pretty good timing for the Browns that they're going to get shoved up in the top of the first. They're not a team that trades down. So they're going to take a non-quarterback with one of their highest picks that they've had in a while, and I'm pretty okay with that. So
we hope they do. We hope they don't get extremely intelligent and switch that up on us, right? Because they could – in theory, try to jump up and take a quarterback like Stroud or Young or whatever. But to a larger point, I'm with you, man. I think that they're in a weird spot, and I don't see it getting much better for them. I really don't. They're not if their offensive structure was good and they you could see them grow, I just don't see it. I just really don't see it. So, I'm going to kind of leave it at that. I'm just going to leave it at that. So 2-2 Cincy and Baltimore, I guess we should put out there how we feel that game is going to go. Baltimore has only trailed. You talk about fan bases who should be upset, much like Cleveland is rightfully upset for not being 4-0. Baltimore also rightfully feels like they should be 4-0. Tougher slate of games, of course, but they've only been trailing for 14 seconds in the whole year, my friend, and they are 2-2, and they've let some slip, and there have been some infighting and things of that nature. So I'm just curious your thoughts on what things have looked like for these two teams and where you think this one goes on Sunday, because it's got a chance to be really interesting.
Yeah, I think that this could be a great game to kind of try and figure out where these guys are. You know, Baltimore, their defense hasn't been playing well. The offense hasn't had a lot of cohesion, but Lamar is, you know, in his bag for most of this. I mean, obviously we got the interception last week, but it was unfortunate, but he's still having a great year. Since he starts out rough, obviously, and then, but they've been trending the right way. You know, we had talked, I think, a week or maybe 2 weeks ago about certain styles of quarterbacks and, you know, changing up their way of playing. And Joe's sack numbers have, you know, sank into the basement, which I didn't think I'd see, at least not this quickly. So they've been kind of fixing some of their issues there. They're without DJ Reader. It should be a very interesting game. You know, I had said, I think we both respected these teams, but, you know, we're on just a hair different where we saw these two. So I guess we get to find out in this game where these two teams are at. It could be a high scoring. I feel like it's going to be a high scoring game. A lot of fun to watch. And I'm not sure exactly how that's going to go. I feel like maybe Cincy, you know, given what they're doing, I don't know. I feel like they're trending a little bit better. But Baltimore, you got to think that they're going to be in it the whole time. I can't see this as blowout one way or the other. So to me, it's almost like I'm going to take it as a class session, you know, and learn more about both these two teams rather than stick my neck out and predict on this one personally.
I'm with you. It's got a chance to be a really – it's got a chance to be it's a coin flip. I don't know. I guess like with these two, Baltimore's not running it as well, and Lamar's putting up a high percentage of their total yardage in general. But he's always sort of handled Cincinnati from his side. The Bengals offense dominated Cincinnati or dominated Baltimore last year a couple times. So I don't really know how that's going to look, but I'm really fascinated by it. I think this could tell us who the early favorite in the division is. So that should be a really good one. I don't have a prediction for it. I really don't. It's very much a coin flip. Cincinnati has started to sort of slowly figure out, hey, we should probably stop being in the gun all the time and get some deception and get under center a little bit. They've done that and had some more success recently. And Baltimore's had some coverage issues with their new defensive coordinator. And that, you know, that could be a problem, but they're not playing that man-to-man stuff as often as what got him in trouble against Cincy last year. And you know, with Cincy, man, you got to just make them work for explosives. Make them work up and down the field. That's the thing you want to do. Don't give them explosives. So, okay, we'll be right back. And then we will wrap up with how we think the Browns have to play to beat the Chargers, as we always do. So one last break and we will return.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, quickly we close, John, on how the Browns beat the Chargers. So I have not totally seen who's in or out for the Chargers this week in terms of the injury report, but, you know, big names that are already out and at least dinged up. I'm not sure what Keenan Allen looks like for this Sunday. Obviously, a huge part of their receiving situation. We know Rashawn Slater, their left tackle, is out for the year, so that matters if Miles is coming back significantly for just altering their general game plan. Because you got to account for Miles every single snap. Clowney says he might play. We'll see what that looks like, but that would be huge. He did not play last year when they went out in LA. If you recall, he had a pregame injury of some kind, a knee that held him out of that one. So he's not playing. Otherwise, I don't think the Chargers have any other big issues going on that we don't already know about. I'll try to keep tabs on that and have a better answer for you guys this weekend as you listen to pods, but you know, West Coast to East Coast, a team that gave up a significant amount of rushing yards last week, and we know how prodigious Cleveland has been with over 160 yards of rushing every single week this year from just running backs, as we know they don't include the quarterback yet. But last week, you know, Dameon Pierce, the only ball carrier for them, goes 14 carries for 131 for the Texans against the Chargers, and Davis Mills, 26 of 35. So I think the defense is very much, you know, a team that's able to be picked apart there. But Herbert is back to himself a little bit after the rib stuff. He went 27 of 39, 340. Mike Evans was a big factor. And then the passing game, Gerald Everett had a 61, a touchdown, and Eckler had 49 and a touchdown. So they remain very scary on offense, but I don't mind getting them here where they have them. And especially the West to East stuff helps a little bit too for a 1 o'clock kick, right? Cause that's very early for their bodies, right? That's a tough game. So where are you at right now? What are you thinking they have to do to beat these guys?
Yeah, I think that they're going to have to be able to put pressure on them. I mean, we should see a very different looking defensive line. Still not full strength, but, you know, I mean, Miles is Miles. So that's a really big deal for them. That, you know, we should be able to score some points on the team. But again, you know, the Browns just are not built to, you know, they're not really built to build up big leads without turnovers. So, you know, honestly, I think they need to have some turnovers, because the last thing I want to see in this game is, you know, a one score game in the fourth quarter or late in the fourth quarter with Herbert. You know, I just don't want to see it. I don't think that that's a great situation for this team. The secondary seemed to get some of their feet under them, working some of those things out. That was on display last week. But I feel like if the Browns are really going to win this game, I feel like they got to win the turnover battle like by two.
They need some stuff to go their way. I think you're right about that. I should update injury stuff. Keenan Allen didn't practice today. Their kicker situation, they just brought in a kicker. Hopkins is not trending to play this weekend, so they brought in a new kicker who's been around a lot of different places. I'm sure he'll go like 8 of 8 in this game, but nonetheless. Josh Palmer, one of their talented receivers, also limited with an ankle, so we'll see if he plays. But that's kind of it. The Browns side, everybody that we've pretty much mentioned is either full or not going. But yeah, anyway, in this one, I think you're right. I think, can they get a couple breaks, right? I felt like a lot of breaks went to Atlanta in the most recent one, right? Like, I think that that's pretty obvious, at least to me, that Atlanta caught several of those fortunate breaks. So I think, can the Browns find a way to get those breaks? That is what is going to be really interesting to me in this one. If they can get a couple of those, capitalize on their red zone opportunities, then I do think they'll have every chance to win it. And even without some breaks, I think they have enough talent to be in this game, because, you know, the Chargers, they want to throw it. Like, they have Eckler and he's a nice player, but they really want to throw it. And I think they're going to really try to be who they are and not tweak or change too much about who they are. So can you sort of keep everything in front of you? Because if you recall last year when they went out there, they had a couple busts. They had a bust for a touchdown from the 30-yard line in, and then they had that deep Herbert kind of a boot action from the gun, rolled right, and Ronnie Harrison had no clue where Mike Williams was, and it was a shot throw over his head for a huge touchdown. The Browns should have won that game. The Browns ran all over them last year, if I recall. A huge game from Nick Chubb, and I'm trying to pull it up right now. I'm pretty sure that both games were in week 5. Week 5 last year, I am correct about that. 47-42 is the final. So, you know, Nick went for 161 on 21 carries. Kareem went 12 for 61. The Browns went for 531 yards in that game and lost it.
It may really help too that Staley's been neutered, you know. Whereas they got a bunch of win percentage gained from some fourth down decisions that he made last year that he's just not doing this year. When those types of little things can help give the edge. I mean, if you got a guy that is consistently making bad choices in that department, and Kevin, you know, he's been a lot more successful. I know coming off last week, people have a sour taste in their mouth, but you can build up, you know, little chunks of percentage points going in opposite directions in that department. So,
yeah, it's going to be extremely fascinating stuff to watch. You know, like I said, because it's at this point, can the Browns stay out of their own way? You know, the red zone stuff, they were just getting in their own way, whether the play calling was too cute or a missed assignment here or there. They had everything in place. If I would love to see them just play a clean game where they stay out of their own way on both sides of the football. If they can do that, it'd be really cool to see how well they compete with somebody, right? At least That's what I think. How well they compete with a team that matters. Because everyone just thinks, man, these guys are just, they're just not going to be able to beat anybody that's any good, and we should just fold these games. Well, I think they're going to play with everyone. The NFL is weird, and I think they're going to play with everyone on their schedule for the most part, and I expect this to be a good game. It would be an extreme letdown if the Browns no-showed it. Extreme. Now, they did that 2 years ago. I don't know if that was 19 or 18. I think it was 19, where the Chargers came into Cleveland in 2019, and they put it on Cleveland in that one. In Cleveland, it was a game that a lot of people were excited about. They had just come off some bigger wins. I'm not totally sure what week that was. I don't usually have this stuff up until a little bit later in the season, but it might even have been week 4, week 5 of that season too. They've been playing these guys so frequently, but the Browns have like had chances against these guys and not been able to put them away for some of those bigger wins that they've really needed. So this is a great opportunity, though. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like the Chargers should be favored in this one, or do you think Cleveland has enough to get it done?
No, I think it should be pretty even game with a little bit toward the Browns for home field. I mean, this definitely looks a lot different than what I imagined when I was looking at the schedule, knowing that we were going to have Brissett, but not knowing anything about the team yet, and looking at what the Chargers we're looking at coming in with. This looked like an easy L to put on your predictions to start. This looks completely different to me now. This is definitely a winnable game. I just don't want to be in that one score situation late in the game. If we can just avoid that, but we have all the tools. I mean, the offensive line is coming into stride. I mean, these guys can play. You know, we got Conklin back. Jed's playing better right now. The secondary started to put things together last week. We're getting chunks of the defensive line back. There's a lot of things that are trending the right way for the Browns. And you can't really say that about the Chargers right now. So, and they're coming across the country to our house. So, I feel a lot better than I would have if you'd asked me before week one.
Me too. So I corrected myself. That was 2018 where the Browns no-showed at home week 6. Mayfield was starting. They were playing better at that point. And Phillip Rivers and the gang came in, and Tyrell Williams.
Oh, I do remember.
3 catches for 118 and 2 touchdowns.
I think Baker had like a better second half, but he was getting toasted in the first.
Yeah. 22 of 46 for 238, a couple picks, a touchdown. So, yeah, the Browns no-showed it. They can't no-show. It would be absolutely devastating. The fan base is a little rattled. I think the interest has been really down this week because I think people had this thing in their mind about having to win the first 4 games of the year to have a chance. I don't personally view it that way, but I think in general people are kind of down on the Browns right now because they think that they're just going to start losing. But this game would be huge to launch them into New England when New England's got this rocky quarterback situation. Got a real chance to win that one. So pivotal football game. And they responded well after the last collapse. Can they respond well again after this one? That's what we'll be paying attention to. So, John, hey, man, great podcast. A lot of fun stuff in this one. We'll continue to have these every Friday for the OBR Film Breakdown followers here. And I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Jake. Let's have some fun Sunday.
Let's hope so, man. So, yeah, thanks to John for joining, you guys for showing up. I have a JOK article coming out tomorrow looking about how he's still right on the cusp of being great. He's just kind of got to figure a couple little things out, and he's going to launch into the upper echelon of linebackers because he's still doing all those fun things. He's right where he needs to be. So wanted to highlight some of that for you. So check that out. Again, have a great Friday, guys. We will have a Chargers guest for your Behind Enemy Lines on Saturday, and then we'll be back with Brad Ward for Sunday morning discussion as we always are. Have a great Friday. Kick off to your weekend. Stay safe. Be well. And go Browns.